Comic Conversations.
It's awesome!
With your host,
the wickedly talented
Tony.
You're gonna be taking splinters out of your fat asses all night long because you got some fat asses. The only chance you have no chance, but you had a chance, is you can run lickety split. You can't run because you got some fat asses.
Alex.
Rapping White Kid, what's your take on that?
Well, I mean, it almost worked for Outback Jack.
And Dave.
Believe me, I have my own demon in my head. People has no idea how dark I am in my head sometimes.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everybody. This is Tony, and you're listening to episode 198 of Comic Conversations, where we talk all things comics for the week of January 10th, 2018. And as always, I'm joined by my co-hosts, Dave and Alex. Alex, how are you doing tonight?
Doing all right.
And Dave.
I'm doing good.
All right. With that out of the way, let's go into our first segment this week, news. It's funny, right before we did the show, we were going over the news stories that we were going to pick out this week. And we're like, yeah, a lot of these stories are, I guess, we're talking about a little, but I don't know how much we have to say. But Alex really pushed for us to talk it. So let's start with our opening story. The news that allegedly, I have to go out of my way to point this out, allegedly Stan Lee is now apparently like piling on these allegations of him being a sick perv.
Creeper.
Yeah, because here's the thing. Everybody, I think everybody knows about the one story about the nursing home, but I was looking up some, I was doing some research on, and apparently last year at a Chicago Comic Con, he ordered a masseuse, and I guess he wanted some action, and she said no, so he, and the funny thing is, the way he solicited her, he was like, pleasure me, or allegedly.
Okay, here.
And then when she said no, he basically, for lack of a better term, Louis C.K. heard.
Okay, so here's the deal. Stan Lee is 95 years old.
Yes.
He very well could be crazy.
I'm sure. More than likely.
Yeah, and the stories in, like, with the nurses or whatever, it was like he was, like, slapping their ass and stuff. Mm-hmm. I know people don't want to hear this, but he's 95 years old. Like, 50 years ago, that shit was acceptable.
Well, here's the thing. Half the people that are responding to this story are just like, he's 95. He's on death's doorstep. Let it go. Yeah.
Like, you never heard about this stuff until recently, and he's old as fuck. So, like, I think, you know, we would have heard something at some point. Because he's been a really public figure for, like, what, 50 years?
Mm-hmm. Since at least early 60s. 50 plus years.
Yeah, so 50 years and we've never heard anything. So, you know, he might just be old and fucking crazy. Crazy old people do that all the time. I told you a story. My grandfather-in-law, he fucking dropped his pants and started playing with his dick in front of a nurse in the home because he's old and crazy.
I know one of my mom's friends, their father, he was like 92. Same deal. Pulled down his pants, started playing with himself.
Yeah, I don't know why the fuck they do it, but they don't know what the fuck's going on.
Well, I think some of it is too. Yeah, their faculties are not 100%. But at the same time, I realize they probably realize they're close to death. And
oh, yeah, so I might as well go for it.
They're past the beyond regrets, so they just want to do whatever they feel like. And, you know, they can get away with it because they basically could just say, I'm old. I'm going to die soon. Just let me do what I want.
But in many cases, I really do think it's just the age thing. You know, they're just mentally incapacitated.
And I mean, in all honesty, the guy's been lying for so long. But,
yes. Alex, you care to elaborate about him lying?
Steve Ditko created Spider-Man, Jack Kirby created every other character, and Stan Lee took credit. All he did was fucking put some words in a box. The artist did everything back then. Stan Lee's been taking credit ever since. Because to be fair, he was a fucking talker. And by the way, we read Mr. Miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Funky Flashman is fucking Stan Lee. That's who he's meant to be.
Yeah.
Jack Kirby created him as a parody of Stan Lee, and he was a fucking bad guy. Like, he went to his deathbed fucking hating that man.
Yeah, for those
Although
of you
who, he did, go ahead. He did, by the way, he did give the fucking the same thing Hulk Hogan did with fucking Randy Savage.
Oh, was where, he hot dogging and grandstanding?
No, he came up with the fucking story of like, oh, well, you know, a couple years ago, brother, me and Macho had a talk and we ironed everything out. Like, they were suddenly friends after he died.
Mm-hmm.
Fucking Stan Lee said the same shit about Jack Kirby.
Well, wasn't there that radio interview that Kirby did and they got Stan on the line? They sort of made nice.
Not really. I played you that clip before. That I don't know. It was somewhere in New York. They had it was Kirby was the one who was on.
Yeah, that's what I said.
And then they brought in Stan Lee, and they were kind of they got into a small argument about who wrote what and this and that. Because Stan was like, well, I don't remember you writing much of anything in any of those bubbles. I know I did it 95% of the time.
Something yeah, because like he did. He fucking wrote the shit in the bubbles, but Jack Kirby was the one who placed the bubbles.
Yeah, I remember what was it, Alan Moore. I think he was doing a panel or something. He was talking about Stan Lee. And he's like, yeah, I've seen the original artwork. And I've seen, obviously, it has all the art in the panels, but on the side, it has everything that's happening. And yeah. So the idea that Stan wrote a lot of these stories is, you know, suspect.
He wrote dialogue.
Yeah, and even he'll even defend. He'll try to say, "Well, we talked about it before Kirby started writing or Ditko started writing." So, you know, obviously, I told them what I wanted, and they gave it to me. So, in that way, he could say he's sort of the writer.
Well, and the issue with that is, well, you'll probably never get the real story, is because like. Ditko is still alive, but he's a fucking crazy hermit who won't give interviews. So, you know, he said stuff in the past, but he doesn't talk.
I remember
still alive. Wow.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He's a weird 90, guy.
90 years
yeah,
old.
He's fucking old, and he's not getting claims of having masseuses jerk him off or whatever.
I remember.
Not
I don't
yet.
Know.
Not yet.
There's still time. What was I going to say? I know there was, speaking of Moore, I think you remember.
And also, he's not as big of a public figure as Stan Lee.
No. Stan Lee did do really good about that.
Yeah. And I remember Moore, speaking of, I brought him up earlier. I think somebody was doing a radio interview with Stan Lee, and I guess for whatever reason why. His lawyer was still stuck in traffic, so they started doing the interview anyway. He's like, oh, I trust you. And so the first question out the gate without his lawyer there, he's all, did Steve Ditko create Spider-Man? and Lee hums and haws and says, well, in my personal opinion, I believe he created Spider-Man. And then the interviewer, obviously this guy's pretty smart and knows what's up. He was quick to say, no, that's not what I asked. Did Steve Ditko create Spider-Man? And of course, he had to just like to stonewall the guy. He of course just said, "Well, I believe." He's like, so he realized he wasn't going anywhere. But yeah, for those of you who wondered, the Marvel method was basically what we just described, where you know Stan would sit down with the artist, tell him what he wanted, allegedly, and then the artist would obviously write the script and draw the book, and then Lee would come in and write the dialogue.
What actually happened was the artist would draw and plot out the entire comic,
mm-hmm.
include word balloons, and then Stan Lee would fill in the word balloons based on what had been drawn. The artist did the vast majority of the work on these books.
To be fair, I've heard people, especially when Kirby started writing at DC, when he like, especially like the New God stuff, I've heard a lot of people say that the Kirby stuff was really bad as far as the writing is concerned. So maybe he did need someone to write dialogue.
Yeah, he couldn't write dialogue. He was an artist.
Yeah, and with that said, there is a role for that, but it's the editor. So the idea that Stan would call himself the writer is, it's being a little generous.
But there's still, when somebody else draws the plot, when somebody else draws the art of what's going on, when somebody else designs the characters, putting fucking words in a word balloon. And by the way, go back and read a lot of that old shit. It's not really well written.
Yeah.
No, not really. Not
like,
at all.
Like, how fucking impressive is that, really? Now, I will give Stan Lee credit. His ability to fucking push comics was kind of amazing.
Yeah, I think all said and done, when Stan passed away, he will, in fact, be remembered as sort of the public face of Marvel. But more importantly, you know, up until, what, about the 80s or 90s, he was the one really trying to push these characters into the... into the mainstream, trying to, you know, do TV shows and cartoons. So you can't take that away from him. And as far as an editor, he was somebody, but, you know, to try to credit him as the writer. I know the best example I could try to explain to people, the Marvel method. I think it was the Galactus saga. Stanley's input was, oh, in this issue of Fantastic Four, I want the Fantastic Four to fight God. And that was, that was allegedly Lee's input.
Yeah. Largely. Well, that was more interesting than I thought it would be.
Well, the thing is, we've talked about Lee and sort of passing, we mentioned how he's a thief and how he takes credit. But, now that we're talking about him and obviously, you know, his days are numbered, it's good that we actually explain why we feel this way. And actually most comic book readers feel this way.
Although I still will, I contend, lay off the guy a little bit. He's
well, he is old and he's probably crazy and yeah.
Yeah. If you're going to be mad for him, be mad about the Ditko and the Kirby stuff.
Yeah.
Which I am.
Well, as long as we're talking about stuff that could potentially make Alex mad. Now, when he first saw this headline, he got upset and then I read the story and I had to explain to him everything. So, this is how it read to, I think, believe the three of us, or me and Alex anyway. We saw that Brian Michael Bendis was writing Action Comics 1000. Because they're currently at, I believe, this week we have, what, 996, 997?
995, I think.
995. Yeah. So obviously 1000's right around the corner. And we obviously knew, we reported a while back, that Bendis is going to be writing for DC. So obviously they want to put Bendis on a big title, and when we heard that they were going to put Bendis on this title, it kind of rubbed me the wrong way. It's like, oh, so Bendis is going to come in and put his name on the big issue. Turns out I read the news story and Bendis is writing a backup in issue 1000 of Action Comics.
There's probably going to be multiple backups because it's issue 1000. So I'm sure it's going to be like 96 pages and have, you know, backups from fucking everybody with a name.
Mm-hmm.
I was pissed though, because I'm here's the deal, and I can, while I hate Brian Michael Bendis, I can say that he has a name, even though I spent time yesterday proving to you his fucking name doesn't really sell.
Well, because I was under the opinion, you know, for a while his X-Men was doing really well, and then
really well. That was the issue.
At first, when they put him on the Iron Man titles, when Tony was still had the moniker of Iron Man, those books were selling kind of well. So I was like, well, say what you will about Bendis, his name kind of means something as far as sales are concerned. And then you had to point out all the facts.
He has many, many failures at Marvel under his belt. Some of them are currently ongoing. So, I mean, that's not all his fault, and it's not all a matter of quality. I pointed out Jessica Jones. We read it. I thought it was good. And it's not really the kind of book that's going to sell incredibly well, but it didn't sell well at all. Nobody was fucking buying that book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Alias, when it came out, sold tons better than the Jessica Jones book, and she's a more high pro... She didn't exist when Alias came out. Mm-hmm. She's a more high-profile character now, and theoretically, Bendis has a bigger name. The big deal of him going to DC is he's a big name who has never, ever worked for DC.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a big deal.
Yeah, regardless of how you feel about the guy, he's still a name. It means something. And him going to DC, considering he's been at Marvel for, what, 17 years now?
Yeah.
That's kind of a big deal.
But when I read, you know, fucking they're putting him on Action Comics, like their longest running comic with their biggest superhero, and you're going to fucking put Brian Michael Bendis on it, I was pissed off. As it turns out, he's going to be writing a different Superman book.
He's writing the quote-unquote mainline Superman title. I'd explain to Alex.
I know we like Action Comics better, and to us,
that's the better, you know, bigger deal Superman book.
It's longer running, and when Grant Morrison, when they put him on Superman in New 52, mm-hmm. he didn't write Superman. He wrote Action Comics. Like, I think Action Comics.
I think really Morrison's sort of the exception to the rule, especially when you talk about, you know, we've been over this. Morrison's kind of a mark for, well, you know, no, old-timey comics.
If you look at, like, who's writing Action Comics and who's writing Superman right now.
That actually brings up an interesting point. The creative on Action Comics is going to be the Superman writer Peter J. Tomasi and the Action Comics writer Dan Juergens.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, Dan Juergens is a bigger name. He's writing Action Comics. Tomasi, while fine, is not as much of a name. He's writing Superman.
But the idea that they're putting Bendis on the Superman title, don't you think that's DC's way of saying this is the important Superman title? Which I think is kind of backwards, because if you think Bendis is a big deal, a big sign, if you're DC, wouldn't you want to put him on Action Comics if that's supposed to be?
I think DC, if you look at what happened during New 52 with sales tanking, mm-hmm. and what happened after Rebirth, shows that a lot of DC fans are fairly traditional in their views on what DC Comics should be. So we're not going to put fucking Brian Michael Bendis, who has this very different way of writing, on Action Comics.
That's a nice way of putting it.
On the secondary title. And I can only imagine it'll be like all his other fucking titles, where it's just going to be 20 pages of fucking heads looking at each other talking in the same fucking voice, because he could only write snarky douchebags. And Superman is not that. Superman is not snarky, and he's not a douchebag.
I remember you were lamenting. You said, oh, he'll be on a Superman, it'll be a solo title. And then you thought about it for a second. Wait, you're like, wait, he's married and he has a family. Oh, no.
Yeah. So the whole fucking book, here's what's going to happen in fucking Superman. The book is eventually going to become about Steel, because Steel is black and is a character nobody cares about. This is Bendis' history, but he's going to reveal that when he was a little kid, he read a fucking Steel comic and he loves John Henry Irons, and he's fucking got to push him. And then they're going to do a Steel solo series and nobody's going to buy it, but he's going to claim that it was a big fucking success, like Luke Cage, even though both Luke Cage's books got shit canned and Luke Cage's Netflix series wasn't watched as much as the fucking Daredevil series or the Jessica Jones series, because he's not fucking over, because he's a boring character. Fuck you, Bendis. And his fucking Lois, what the fuck is he going to do to Lois? Go read some of the fucking Avengers issues when Luke Cage joined and Bendis was writing it and Jessica Jones was there. She was a naggy bitch. Like, when she was by herself, she was a fine character. As soon as she was the wife of Luke Cage, she became the most insufferable fucking character on Earth and pushed harder than a lot of the fucking new people he had join the team when he would do a whole issue on them and then never mention them again. You would sometimes not see them in the comic for months after he did a whole issue focusing on them. He can't handle large casts, and he has issues with small casts with a married couple.
Go ahead.
Hey, do you think that Bendis going to DC right now and is at this point of his career is similar to when Hulk Hogan went to WCW?
I don't think he's going to bring DC down.
Hey, Hogan brought it up for a while.
Okay, I'll tell you this much. Jeff Johns is not giving up power in that company to fucking Brian Michael Bendis.
Jeff Johns is like Sting or Ric Flair.
Well, except he's actually drawing. Sting never drew.
And speaking of drawing, who's drawing Bendis' backup?
I'm trying to Jim Lee.
Yes.
Which they're trying to help him out. Wait, I'm trying to think of the wrestling connection here. So DC is doing better than Marvel right now.
Yes.
So, and Jeff Johns was sort of in charge of what led to them doing better. Mm-hmm. Which means Jeff Johns is more like Steve Austin, and Bendis is like Ming coming in.
I don't know if I'd put Johns.
He's got to be a guy who used to draw but doesn't draw anymore, so he had to go to a different place.
Yeah, but the thing is, are you really gonna put Johns as the Austin character? Because, you know, the Doomsday Clock hasn't really been knocking us dead, and from what I hear...
Well, no, he didn't personally like it, but, like, in position as editor, DC did better enough that they beat Marvel for the first time in years.
But I also believe Johns was also in charge of a lot of the movie stuff, too, so Justice League doing the way it did, I'm sure that's going to probably blow back.
He was a part of it,
yeah,
but Warner Brothers was in charge of it. he didn't call all the shots. So you can't really blame that on him.
And also
if you look at those movies, you could sort of see where it would have been his fault.
And to back up your statement, I'm looking at November sales here, and your argument that Action Comics is the much bigger deal. Yes, Action Comics is number 21, and Superman is at number 35.
Well, it's because Action Comics is actually about Superman. You remember we were reading Action Comics, and they did that. Was it Action Comics or Superman where they did the storyline where someone was like fucking with Jonathan and his powers, and it turned out to be Manchester Black?
I believe that was Action Comics.
Yeah, and I was really excited to read that, and they were pushing it heavily.
Mm-hmm.
And then we stopped doing the show, so I never read it.
Mm-hmm.
And that reminds me, I need to make a note of that because I have to go back and read that.
Mm-hmm.
Action Comics is the bigger title. It's like Batman is more important than Detective Comics, even though it's a reverse.
Yeah, I just assumed, I didn't know any better, so I just assumed, it's the same situation. Superman is the mainline title, and Detective Comics is the secondary. I just assumed that's how it was with Superman as well.
Usually that's how it works for titles in general.
The difference is in DC, like, there was an Action Comics before there was a Superman book. There was a Detective Comics before there was a Batman book. They're the older titles because they didn't – they were like anthology comics originally. Like, Action Comics wasn't always about Superman.
Mm-hmm.
So they just fit stuff into it, and they became the most over characters, and then they continued the numbering. It's just – it was a naming convention originally.
Yeah.
That's all it was.
Yeah, but wasn't Superman's first appearance in Action Comics number one?
Yes.
Wasn't it Action Comics, like, 15?
No, number one.
Was it?
I believe so.
Yeah. With Batman, I do believe that Batman's first was later on. It was like Detective Comics 27 or something.
Wasn't that Robin's first appearance?
Let me double check.
But as sort of, you know, I'll wait for Dave to look up his fact, but sort of to help us transition into our next segment. Yeah, even just this week, when we read Action Comics, that felt like a much bigger deal than what we read last week with Superman.
Yes, Detective Comics number 27 is the first appearance of Batman.
Well, there you go.
So, backing up our statements with facts here on Comic Conversations.
just a really side note, I don't have anything much to say about Gail Simone is writing a Domino series for Marvel, so she's going back to Marvel.
So at least they got somebody, because so far it's been a bit of a brain drain. Either people leaving to do their Image series, or we've seen Jeff Lemire and Bendis.
They got somebody, but she's writing fucking Domino.
Yeah, they're obviously thinking Gail Simone's kind of a name, and if you're Gail Simone, you kind of want to write something with, you know, just do whatever you want.
She claims she's always like Domino.
Well, they're always going to say that. And also, she's supposed to be in the new Deadpool movie, and Marvel, as of late, have been trying to capitalize off movies. So
apparently there is a Weapon X series, and she is the most popular character in it.
There you go.
So
at least gives us an opportunity to read Marvel again. Because remember we liked that what was it, the Clean Room?
Clean Room was good.
It's phenomenal. So
yeah.
So maybe,
I don't know if this will be like that. She wrote Deadpool back in the day, and I didn't like it. But that's because I had attitude after Joe Kelly left the book, and I never liked Deadpool again.
I feel like we're going on a tangent here now.
Although the Detective Comics was also an anthology, even though it was his first appearance. Because I'm looking at the issue right now. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7... 8 different stories in that one book.
No, that's what I said. I said I thought it was the anthology books, but it eventually became just about Batman.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know when that switchover happened or how they determined it, but maybe letters or something.
Okay.
Like, people wrote the most about that Batman guy who shot people.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, yeah, we got to go with this fucker. That's it.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's news. Let's move on to our next segment, this week's books.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard and melted bones still have the radio. Oh,
All right, let's go into this week's books, which include Bloodshot Salvation 5, Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe 1, She-Hulk 6-161, Daredevil 597, Avengers 675, Battlestar Galactica versus Battlestar Galactica 1, Mr. Miracle 6, Flash 38, Action Comics 995, Archie 27, and to open up this week's books, we have Ultras number 9, writer Paul Jenkins, art by Leah Les.
You remember when we read this book when it came out and it was kind of good?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not good anymore.
Honestly, you know, I thought there were moments where the book was kind of good.
There were moments, but the thing is, this book. Okay, there's two things they changed that I noticed. Number one, and this is our fault. They introduced a bunch of new characters. They apparently changed the lead villain, and since we weren't reading it, we didn't know. And number two, they changed the artist.
Mm-hmm.
They got a much worse artist, which also negatively impacted the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it had character moments that were good, but I didn't know who most of the characters were because I hadn't.
I believe the Morph character was, in fact, that one superhero that got their neck broken by the first supervillain, right? And she felt super bad. And this was the follow up.
That one was, but this book. So Dave wasn't reading this with us when it launched. It was really similar in plot to X-Men. The people have superpowers, are called Alters, and they just get superpowers. And there was a group of good ones, and there was a group of like five bad ones with like a supremely powerful one.
Okay. That's what I had questions about because I wasn't sure what the hell was going on.
Okay. That's the thing. And these guys, some of them were with him, and he had an original name. His name was like Matter Man or something. He was a younger guy. Some of these guys worked for him, but, you know, the side story is like the guy's, am I allowed to say tranny or is that offensive? Tranny.
It's technically offensive, but I know that's not going to stop you. So,
okay, it's cool. He wants to be a chick. So he's going through with that. And that was the side story. And the only one who knew was like his brother, and his brother was, handicapped. Like he couldn't talk,
mm-hmm.
but he also, they found out he had the powers. He ironically had mind powers, and he was the only one who knew. So that part of the story was good, and like him, his day-to-day life was good, and then he had kind of this compelling villain. But what held it all together was it had really good art. The art took such a dive down, and this was like an action-heavy book, that it actively hurts the book. It looks kind of amateurish now, which, you know, it's a secondary comic company, so I don't.
Is this the company that is made up of creator owned type things or?
Sort of. It's the publisher that has all the big names.
Uh huh.
So
I think it's all creator owned.
I remember before we stopped doing the show. Or at least when I stopped doing the show, I remember this was the story, was they had a lot of big names. They were getting together to do this, but I completely forgot about it.
Well, that's because it, like, some of the, like, they still exist. Like, the books have continued, but they don't really announce much, and they tend to not do a lot of new comics from what I've seen. They have their titles, which I believe are all creator owned.
Yes, you are correct. I just looked it up right now.
Titles.
Aftershock, I'm quoting this from their own site. Aftershock's published works are creator owned, and his portfolio includes comics by Warren Ellis, Garth Ennis, and Marguerite Bennett.
Yeah, so it's like that. Some of those people are still doing the books,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like they've signed a bunch of new people up. They just keep publishing whatever they already have. And by the way, this being at number 9, we stopped doing the show more than, like, it must have taken a break or something.
That's the thing, because we obviously, we've been out of the game for a couple months now. But the thing is, we missed some stuff, but didn't feel like we missed a ton.
Yeah, well, I think we stopped at, like, issue 5. So this must not come out monthly.
That's what I'm thinking, yeah.
Which, I mean, but the issue was, I'm sorry, that was a tangent. The issue was about Morph, one of the heroes who has the power to like rearrange his body. Mm-hmm. He had his neck broken, and if he turns back like normal human, he will die.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to be weird shape-shifty guy all the time, but he can't do it forever. So eventually he's going to die. And for some reason, Chalice, our hero, feels really bad about this. There is a older woman who has superpowers, and her son was kidnapped by the bad guys, and they wanted to go rescue him. They did. And the other side story was Chalice told best friend that he's going to be a woman, and they had a brief discussion where he explained that he likes chicks. So
didn't you say that's always a question you had sometimes with the
I did
people
that
are transitioning?
That. Well, because my thinking was like, if you're a dude and you just like you just think you're a chick, right? But you're still a dude, wouldn't you then still like chicks? Like you,
I get the feeling. I figure the feeling is above our pay grade, to be honest.
Yeah, I don't think I can answer that. But I'm just, you know, in my head, I'm thinking like you're still at your core, like a guy, so you still want chicks. Would be my thinking. But still, when a male character refers to himself as a gay woman, that was a little weird to read. But his friend took it well, by the way.
Yeah, well, yeah. At first, he was like, kind of apprehensive about it, but then he, you know, obviously he accepted it, and he, obviously they made nice with it. I felt like that part of the book was kind of weak, and that part and the part with the superhero stuff was kind of weak. I thought the morph stuff. I know when Dave was crapping on this book, I was like, well, let's see how bad it is. And first, this opens up with the morph stuff, and I really liked it. And I thought it was well written. I thought it was interesting. So I'm like, okay, I don't know where Dave's coming from, and then the rest of the book wasn't all too great. So
I'm comparing it to what it was, and not that it couldn't be good again. I mean, he's a good writer. It's just I didn't care, and a part of it was because I didn't know some of the characters. I think. And
you
I
know,
hated the art.
There's a theme this week of all these books. It's like 90% of the books that I read this week were either in the middle of or at the last issue of an arc.
Yeah, well, that part is good, though, because you know a new arc is going to start.
Yeah, I know.
So that part was good. Alex, do you want to keep reading this book? I know Dave probably won't, but I'm curious to see where you fall on the spectrum. Because I'm sort of indifferent. If you want to keep reading it, it's fine.
I can find other stuff to read, because I'm going to recommend a couple new books when we go to next week's books, so I'm cool not reading this.
Okay.
I'll read it on my own if I want.
Okay, which means you're not going to read it, because as we've heard already, when we weren't doing the show, you weren't in any comics. Now, I will say this. I didn't read most of the comics we read while we were gone, but I read some books.
I read some stuff. I just didn't read a lot, and I didn't read consistently.
Hey, as long as we're talking about books that we took some time off, but it didn't feel like a whole lot passed, let's talk this week's Archie number 27 by Mark Waid and Audrey Monk.
This is the last issue of an arc. A lot of shit happened.
But the thing is,
reset everything to one.
But the thing is, I'm reading this book, and obviously there's some stuff that I missed out on. But for the most part, this it was all like the last 27 issues have apparently been dealing with something that just pretty much ended here.
What happened to Betty? Apparently she couldn't walk or something.
Yeah, that is something that we missed out on. Apparently she was in some kind of accident, and she had difficulty walking, but by the end of this issue, she slowly but surely started walking again.
And apparently Archie broke up with Veronica.
Yeah, it was actually a cool little moment where Archie couldn't figure out who to choose, and he's like, oh, I hate having to choose. And then obviously he goes to Jughead for counsel. He's like, oh, I got a certified way to make sure you make the right decision.
Yeah, flip a coin and call it in the air.
And before before the coin can hit the ground, he's like, quick, make a pick now. And he's like, Betty. And without being 100% cool with the decision, he's like, nope, that's it. That's your decision. I feel like in these kind of situations, when you make that kind of decision, that's usually what you should probably go with. It's your gut decision. So that was kind of cute. Obviously, we got some Go ahead.
It made sense to me.
Yeah, sort of a gut reaction. But before he could break up with Veronica, Veronica sort of made the decision for him.
Yeah.
Because when he went to her house, all of the stuff that he gave her was on the front lawn in the box.
Yeah. And apparently Betty had also been seeing some dude, too, but they're not together. I don't know who this
it
guy was.
Yeah, they mentioned in the recap page that at first it started off as just revenge. But when she found out that, you know, Archie and Betty were just hanging out as friends, she felt kind of stupid. But I get the feeling in the future, that's probably going to wind up being a storyline that goes somewhere.
Yeah, but they reset it to zero, and then at the end,
well, not necessarily zero, because remember at the beginning of the series, well, I guess you're right, because I remember I thought this book opened up with Betty and Archie together, but no, I remember now. They had just broken up. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
So we went through 27 issues just to get back to zero.
Back to square one. Although I'm shocked Wade's still writing.
This that's the thing I'm wondering. Come issue 28, this kind of felt like a bit of a finale. Like, obviously they set up some stuff. So I wonder if this is the end of Wade's tenure on the book.
Let's be honest here. It's an Archie book. He can't ever finally end up with Betty or Veronica, or the comic ends.
Yeah.
So this is always going to happen. He's going to be with one of them for a while, and then he's going to be with another one, and then he's going to be with another one. The good thing Wade does is he adds the side characters, and he does stuff with them. They had the thing with the nerd, and apparently Moose is gay.
He is?
I never got that impression.
You get that when he's like
in the early one of the earlier issues, and in that other Archie book, he has a girlfriend.
Yeah, he does, but he's in high school.
Are you basing this off his reaction when he called that one chick his best friend?
He looked really sad that he was like chasing girls.
No, I think he was more hurt that he almost said best friend, because at first he had to correct himself. He was like, "Oh, second best friend." And then
Moose, I might be reading in because so many comic characters are gay now.
I think it was more so he almost slipped out that chick was his best friend, when in fact Moose should probably be his friend.
Oh, he wasn't his best friend anymore?
Yeah, he's like, "Hey, what about me, Dan?"
Oh, no, they have another gay character, don't they?
Yeah, Kevin.
Yeah. Did his book ever come out?
I don't know. I'm sure when look up Archie.
Was that part of the
new line? Yeah.
The Kickstarter scandal.
Yeah, the cyber panhandling they were doing.
Bastards.
But no, I think
everybody forgot about that.
I think you're looking into that. So obviously the issue ends with Archie going up to Betty's house, you know, trying to make nice. But Betty's not 100% convinced. He's like, "Oh, you're just trying to get back with me just out of sympathy because of what happened in the accident." She's all, "Let's just take it slow." And that's pretty much how the issue ends.
Well, and then there was a prologue at the end with, what's his name? Reggie?
I don't know his name, but I know what you're talking about.
Reggie.
Yeah, he is some bombshell about the, what are the Ginger's names?
The what?
The Blossom Twins?
Yeah, there we go. Oh. So that was the lead for the next arc. You know, I'll say this much about Wade. I like Wade, but for some reason why there's some books that he writes I don't much care for. I don't feel like they're right for him. I think this is like the perfect book for Wade, because Wade knows how to tell really good, like I would say even cute stories, and this feels like the perfect book for him.
Okay. I'll do it tomorrow if you want.
What do you think, Dave?
Yeah.
I think this was the best Mark Waid book I read.
This week. You know, the funny thing is, when we were reading this book, we kind of stopped reading it. But at the same time, when we stopped reading it, it wasn't because it was bad. It was just because, we kind of know what we're getting. But what we're getting from it isn't bad. So
I had the same reaction to this. It's always been a well-written book. I just don't have much to say about it.
It's the treadmill, right? It's, you know.
Yeah.
You know, things may happen, but ultimately you're not getting anywhere, and it's the same stuff over and over again.
Yeah, it's – well, because the thing is, every comic is, you know, every comic kind of runs on a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
You never have permanent change. But this one, I think it's slightly more highlighted, and it's also because it's so set in like their high school kids.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, they're always going to be high school kids, and they're always going to have these off and on again relationships. And they're the new characters they introduce are characters from the classic series. So you're only going to have a set amount of characters. The setting never changes. The people never change, which if the people did change, people wouldn't like the book. That's the problem. Like, you can't have Archie or Jughead grow as characters, because then they wouldn't be Archie and Jughead.
Here's the best way to put it. Most comic books are on a treadmill, like you mentioned earlier, but this book has a much smaller treadmill.
Well, yeah, because they can't, you know, have fucking aliens come and attack, or they can't have characters suddenly do heel turns, or...
or die and come back.
Yeah, they can't do that, because it's more realistic.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of... It's more like a sitcom. Like, when you change something big in the sitcom, when you have, you know, the two characters who have been hinting at dating forever, and then they finally put them together after 7 seasons, the show goes to shit.
Yeah.
Because everybody wanted it, but once it happens, the appeal of the show goes away.
Or the shows where, you know, the dad gets fired or quits his job, and by the end of the episode, he gets it back.
Yeah. Rick and Morty did that for an entire season.
Yeah, see, there you go.
Yeah, Jerry got divorced, and then he was just suddenly back. And they barely explained it.
All right, from Archie, let's go to DC with Action Comics 995, writer Dan Jurgens, art by Brent Booth.
This was the final part of a story, but it was pretty easy to understand what was going on.
Mm-hmm. Also, they did that thing in comic books where they're, you know, there's obviously dialogue, and then they're moving the plot along, but at the same time, they have that kind of stilted dialogue where it explains it to people.
They spoke in exposition.
Yes, there we go.
It wasn't as bad as, like, you know, Final Fantasy 13, but it was noticeable. But I appreciated it because I hadn't read the previous issues.
So what there it has to do with what Booster Gold and time travel and what's it they called?
They gave him a new origin.
So what was his new origin?
Booster Gold's old origin was that he was trying to make it in the future, but he was a big loser.
Uh-huh.
So he traveled to the past where his technology stuff would allow him to become a big superstar hero, and he could be rich. In this one, they explained the reason he did the time travel and stole, you know, basically his costume was because his dad was a horrible human being who, like, beat his mom and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she left him, or he went to jail. The dad ended up going to jail, and Booster was trying to support his mom, and he did all this to get money for his mom, basically. But he couldn't get back, because if he went back, they would have arrested him for stealing the stuff.
So when they were talking about how Superman, he went... he's talking about his dad still being alive. And
There was a I don't know if this is official, but there was the character floating around DC, Mr. Oz, who everybody thought was Ozymandias, but he can't be Ozymandias because we found out Ozymandias is Ozymandias. It turned out they did a big reveal, and it was Jor-El.
Mm-hmm.
So Superman's dad, but he was like a bad guy. And
sort of.
Don't think we ever had confirmed that it was actually him, but since Dr. Manhattan is behind all this, I mean, he should be able to bring somebody back to life, so it could be, but he was apparently traveling through time looking for Jor-El.
I see.
But they ended up in Booster Gold's
future,
and Booster was arrested and put in the same cell as his dad, which was funny. And his dad's like, hey, you could break us out. And he's like, I'm not gonna fucking break you out, you prick. But then Superman came to save him and fucking pounded his dad's head against the wall.
Yeah,
Superman
was
kind of violent in this issue, actually.
Yeah, there was a cute little moment where he busted in not, you know, in the same prison as his dad. And he's like, oh, you can bust me out. He's like, I'll gladly stay in jail for the rest of my life as long as you're still here.
There was also a hint that Skeets might be turning on Booster.
I think he was, like, undermining him, but for the better.
Well, like, he was, yeah, because he was,
He was trying to get, he's trying to get Booster Gold to do the right thing.
Captured. And, God, that was funny, too. It just reminds you of what a fucking Boy Scout Superman is. When Skeets is explaining to him Booster's history, he's like, oh, well, he stole stuff? I don't know if we should go save him then. Maybe he should just pay the price or whatever. And he's like, yeah, so if he stays here, though, like the entire fucking
universe and
the entire universe could end because he's not supposed to and it could fuck everything up and time travel. And then Superman's like, oh, okay. So he went and rescued him.
But that was cute. They're, you know, being the consistent with the Superman character. This is a fun book. I liked it a lot.
No, I liked it. It's a fun story, and, you know, it's, well, you got Booster Gold in there, so it kind of has to be. They tried to give it some seriousness with, like, the sad backstory, but, you know, at least everybody wasn't dead. Like, he got to go hang out with his mom, who hadn't seen him in, I don't know how long, because time travel. Time had passed, though.
Yes.
And his mom hadn't seen him, so... And he pointed out, like, there, it's not like she can look at, like, the history records and see Booster Gold, because even he knows he's kind of like a jobber hero. It's like, hey, come on, I was in Justice League International.
I believe his little catchphrase is the best superhero nobody knows about.
Yeah. Which is good. I don't know what this was, because this is like a 5-issue storyline. Are they going to give, like, Booster Gold a comic?
I don't think because it probably wouldn't survive, but they may put him on a team.
I don't want him to have a comic unless Blue Beetle's in it too, since he's alive again.
Yeah, Ted Kord.
Yeah, Ted Kord, Blue Beetle, not Jamie.
I get the feeling that there is going to be the temptation to poke him up with Jamie, and I'm like, I don't want that.
No, that doesn't work. Because, like, I like Jamie or Jaime. As a character. Or Jaime, sorry. I don't think he's a bad character. It's just I don't want Booster Gold with him. I want Ted Kord with him. I want the old team back. Because that's fun. Then again, Ted Kord might fucking die because they're doing this Watchmen crossover and they got all these, you know, Blue Beetle's one of the characters they were going to make, they were going to use for Watchmen originally. So maybe Night Owl will come back and fucking kill him.
Aw, can we not? Can we just leave Blue Beetle alone?
That pissed people off. Kill him again?
Can we not?
Well, they only brought him back.
This is Rebirth. This is Rebirth. Can we not get like a million deaths?
Well, when we talk about our next DC book.
Oh, you want to go straight into Mr. Miracle now?
Oh, it's Mr. Miracle?
Well, I was thinking Flash, but I'm like, I don't remember there being any deaths. So let's just go into Flash because it's the alphabetical order. Flash issue 38, writer Joshua Williamson, art by Howard Porter.
The end of a 5-part storyline?
Yeah.
So what I was talking about in this is, I'm blanking on his name. Captain Cold.
There we go.
Yes.
Wow. Captain Cold. I forget his name. What's the name of the guy with the red tights that runs fast?
Well, that's Flash. I know him. Captain Cold was apparently running a criminal empire from Iron Heights, from the prison. And he also murdered some people. Before we stopped, we read a story in Flash that was about the Rogues. And they pointed out most of them don't really kill people that often.
Yeah.
But suddenly Captain Cold is like just straight murdering fools.
Yeah, in fact, that's what the story dealt with. They apparently, Captain Cold had planted or had framed Trickster for a murder.
Yeah, but he committed the murder. And then he was going to murder another criminal. Well, I guess maybe that's their thing. He was only killing criminals. So it's okay. Well, what ended up happening was Godspeed, the villain from the first run, who didn't think he was particularly villainous.
Mm-hmm.
He was kind of like the Punisher with Flash powers. He basically ratted Captain Cold out because he knew their whole plan, and he led to them catching him. So he kind of did a face turn, but he also is still in prison, so that doesn't really matter, I guess. Right? Like, he's not getting out of prison because
and he was quick to point out that, you know, I could have broke out of jail. He's like, you know, there was nothing stopping me, but I just decided I've done a lot of bad things, so I should be here.
They moved Captain Cold to Belrive, and, like, from what I remember of Iron Heights, it was actually, like, a really hardcore supervillain prison. I don't know why they would move him to another prison that is apparently meaner or whatever to criminals. Like, I thought they were going to send him to Arkham. Although he's not really that crazy.
No, not
but
really.
But they're just like, hey, you're going to go to Belrive. And I'm like, that's like the fucking jobber prison in D.C.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you're explaining this. I'm kind of quiet because I'm still kind of new to this whole D.C. continuity.
Yeah, it's Arkham is the one with all the Batman villains who are crazy. Much.
Okay.
Iron Heights is the prison in Central City where Flash is. And I remember the storyline where they launched Iron Heights. It was actually really good. It was like Central City's version of Arkham, sort of. And then Belrive is another prison. I'm not sure where it's actually located. Possibly it's also in Gotham, because Gotham has a lot of criminals. But it was like they never put the big villains there. So,
well, Flash doesn't have a lot of big villains, so.
Well, hey, the rogues are well loved. That's why they keep doing storylines with them.
Yeah, well, but they're well loved as a bunch of goofs.
Well, yeah. I thought this was kind of effective in getting him Captain Cold at least over.
Yeah, because the thing is, Johns had made him a pseudo good guy.
Yeah. So they apparently decided, no, we need to flip that shit.
Yeah, well, they flipped it in a big way. Because at first he'd been inching towards that, and apparently now he just kills people now.
But again, he only kills criminals.
Yeah, that is kind of weird.
Because, like, even because Captain Cold sold Copperhead drugs, but he was going to kill her. Or drugs, guns. But he was going to kill her, because they were, like, booby-trapped, and they were going to freeze her. Kid Flash found out about it, and he saved him, but he didn't know Kid Flash was going to find out. Like, he only expected her to be there. I think that's what they'll use if they try to keep him from being, like, you know, a horrible human being. But they've also, you know, in 38 issues, they've done two long storylines with the Rogues, so I think we might be getting a break for them. We haven't had Gorilla Grodd yet.
That's coming.
But that's, I mean, if you use Gorilla Grodd, that's like the event after Doomsday Clock, because that's got to be a major event.
Yeah, it's kind of a big deal. All right, let's wrap up the DC stuff with Mr. Miracle number 6, writer Tom King, art by Mitch Gerards.
I had no idea what was going on.
Yeah, that's because no one read the first 5 issues of this like I told them to.
To be fair, I read the first issue, and I think I've bought issue 2 and 3, but I still have not read them.
In preparation for this, I read the first 5 issues. This is the best comic coming out right now.
Ooh.
This comic is incredible, and reading this issue, you can't really get a sense.
I was about to say that. I'm like, you can't tell from this issue, because I think Dave was with me here. But not only did I not know what was going on, I wasn't super invested, and I think this was this particularly good
idea. Is this book a comedy book? Because it seemed like one.
No, but this issue was. It has comedy in it, but it's largely not a comedy book. It's actually a really serious story.
It's comedy to break up the really dark stuff.
Let me give you a rundown on what happened in this book as quick as I can. In the first issue, Mr. Miracle basically tried to kill himself, but played it off like, oh, I'm the escape artist. I'm going to escape death. He wasn't. He was trying to kill himself, and he failed. Well, Barda saved him, and then he realized maybe I shouldn't do this. So they get into, you know, their history. Like, they both grew up on Apocalypse being tortured all the time by Granny Goodness. So they had shit childhoods. But Mr. Miracle escaped, and Barda eventually left and married him, that's all good. What's happening in this is Highfather, the leader of the New Gods, has apparently died, and Orion, his son, who is Darkseid's son, so the reason Mr. Miracle lived on Apocalypse was because as like a peace deal, they did this child swap thing.
Mm-hmm. This I'm familiar with.
Highfather got Orion and Darkseid got Mr. Miracle. So they did like a swap thing. So Orion's always more hardcore than all the other New Gods, but Orion took over as the new Highfather when Highfather died. And he immediately went on like full out war against Apocalypse. So in the previous issues, Barda and Miracle or Mr. Miracle had been going to New Genesis and like leading these battles against Apocalypse. Well, eventually, he gives them a mission and he's like, okay, I need you to go murder Granny Goodness. And the problem is like Mr. Miracle is like a really good dude. So he didn't feel right about killing her. Like, she was a horrible human being, but every time he talks about her, he can only remember the couple times she did something really nice. So he can't kill her. Barda, on the other hand, who grew up there and was tortured by her, just fucking beats her to death with her cosmic rod and kills her. He realized, though, that this is fucked up. Like, we were having a meeting because they presented it as, like, peace talks. And they sent them, and then he was supposed to kill him during the peace talks. He never thought this was right. But they killed her, so they completed the mission. They're back at home, and Forager, one of the bug people that they basically use as, like, cannon fodder, because there's, like, 80 billion of them, because they're bug people. He came and he said, hey, so Orion is killing like hundreds of millions of us. And some of us went to talk to him about it and he executed us for treason. So it's kind of a bad thing. And then while he's explaining it to him, like Mr. Miracle's sitting in his living room listening to him. And Light Ray just comes in and fucking kills the guy. And he's like, oh, he was a traitor against Orion. And Mr. Miracle's like, all right, fuck this. I gotta go talk to him. So he goes to talk to him and he basically says, we think Darkseid has the anti-life equation. And I think I've been infected with it, which is why he tried to kill himself, he thinks. And he goes, and Orion, I think you've been infected with it too. And Orion's like, oh, really? Well, okay, you're going on trial now because you're also treasonous. So they do some shit and they have a trial, and that was issue 5. That was the fucking best issue of this comic. It was so good. But he finds him guilty and he's like, you got 2 days. So Barda and Mr. Miracle went around and they did all this shit and then finally decided, you know what? No, fuck it. We're not going to die. When they sent the guys, they beat the shit out of them, and then they went to New Genesis. So this whole issue was them discussing how they were going to redesign their house.
That was cute for like the first couple of pages, but then after a while, it just became obnoxious.
The whole book, practically,
if you read the first 5 issues, it would make more sense.
I still don't have to like it though.
And the art was really fucking good. Like, the action scenes were incredibly well done, everything they were doing. And they did cut it off when they needed to for the purposes of the story. Like, they showed, basically what this issue was they showed them doing lots of really cool stuff, like casually cutting people's heads off and fighting big dragon monsters.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole time they're having a conversation about how they're going to decorate their house. And then eventually Barda tells them the reason she's talking about this is because she's pregnant. And that was actually a really cute moment too, when he like fucking jumps on her back and hugs her.
Yeah, that's the one I kept forgetting. I just assumed they were the same size, but I have to remember.
No, he's huge. Yeah, he's, I don't know how big he is, but she's like fucking giant. So that's why they do that. It's supposed to be funny. he goes in and you think at first you're like, okay, Orion's going to stomp the shit out of this fool.
Mm-hmm.
But he goes in and Orion's already had the shit kicked out of him and Darkseid's standing there.
Ooh.
And then Barda comes in and it's bad shit. This is the halfway point because this is going to be 12 issues. I highly recommend you guys read the first 5 issues. I am not the only one putting this over strongly.
No, no. Certainly everyone's been putting it over. And it's like, I was lazy.
I seriously think this is like, we loved Vision. This is every bit the equal of Vision, but it's completely different. Like, they're such different characters that it's not Vision, but it has the same strength.
I
would definitely read the first 5 because there's no way I'm going to stop reading this.
If it makes Tom King feel any better, I'm still reading Batman.
Well, this book sells well, so.
So is Batman.
Every book Tom King writes now, I'm going to read, especially if it's like a secondary character.
Yeah, because, you know, especially we've seen with Batman, there's a couple of things if they're doing a big crossover that he has to incorporate, and sometimes it doesn't come off supernatural. But if he's doing with a marginal character that he can pretty much have carte blanche to do whatever he wants with.
Tom King should do nothing but write 12 issues of comics about second and third string characters. That should be his only job. Because every time he's done it, it's been great, and he should keep doing it. And if it gets over whatever he does, they can then find someone who's decent to take over writing that character based on the hype that came from the King run. That's what they should be doing. They should be using this guy. Tom King is the NXT of the DC universe.
But
he makes some stars. And then they send him to DC and they ruin them.
Well, here's the thing. I get the feeling that's what would happen. As soon as he leaves the book, like a couple of people would give it a try, but then eventually everybody would jump ship and then eventually the book would get canceled.
They have other good writers who can do it. It's the problem is when he writes a character, he writes them in such a specific way and it's always slightly different from what they've been. I don't think any talented writers would want to do that. Like, they would want to put their own spin on it because they have actual talent and they don't want to ape what somebody else did. And you generally can't because, I mean, I'm sure this story is going to have an end point.
Well, it is because it's only going 12 issues.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's not going to end on a cliffhanger. Like, it's going
to... He's going to find a way to incorporate this into his Batman run.
I don't know if he will because it's selling fine. I think he understands that it's a different thing because it doesn't read like his Batman.
Yeah, that's certainly true.
He knows it's different. So, but yeah, I love this book and I wish it came out every week like fucking Batman does.
Yeah, but it doesn't.
No.
All right, a book I'm curious what both of you have to say, because I don't know how I feel about this. There are parts of it I like, but I'm still not sure if I'm going to continue reading this. BSG versus BSG number one, writer Peter David, art by Johnny, let's see if I can pronounce it, Desjarins.
Okay, I think the biggest issue with this book was, if you are familiar with the original series and the new series, I'm sure this is a great book. But because I have no clue what the hell's going on in the first half, because I don't know anybody, I'm lost.
You know Starbuck?
I know a Starbuck, but that's not the one I know.
Well, that's
yeah,
what I'm...
I mean,
go ahead.
Going in, I knew I'd never seen the original Battlestar Galactica.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know anything about it. When I'm looking at this, I'm just thinking they're wearing fucking stupid outfits. But, I mean, that's probably what they wore in the original show. I don't know who the characters are. They did a good enough job of explaining to me who the characters were.
Yeah, but
I
it was hard for me to get into it because I'm like, okay, yeah. Well, you know,
and then the last page, it's like, oh, there's a fucking weird wormhole here, and we went through it. No, there's Adama.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, okay.
I think they probably understood that more people now are familiar with the new series.
Yes.
So they kept that till the end as the cliffhanger. Because, like, oh, then people will read it because they get to read about the characters they know.
Yeah,
but it's like nothing's going to happen in this.
No, in the long term, nothing's going to wrong. Although you, well, yeah, because ultimately you know where at least the new series goes. At least we know where it goes. What I found was interesting. Now, I know the backstory of the Cylons in the original continuity, that they were invented by this other alien species. But I did like that they stuck this in, that they felt the need to explain it to new people.
Well, it was like,
because they ran into a Cylon, and obviously you're expecting, like, you know, the toaster, right? And it's like this lizard person.
Yeah, with like a big tail and.
Yeah, but they're the ones who made these Cylons.
But they're also called Cylons.
Yeah, but I was under the impression they weren't called that in the TV show.
I don't fucking know. She's a part of the lizard race, and her boyfriend made the aliens, or the robots, and she broke up with him because he made the robots. That was what she said.
Yeah, I'm looking it up right now, 1978.
Yeah,
Cylons are a fictional race of robots in the original Battlestar Galactica TV series. The Cylons were created by a reptilian race also called Cylons. However, the reptilian race died out centuries earlier, leaving behind only the race of robots.
Yeah, because in this issue, they stressed that she was the last of the Cylons.
And she was hiding.
Yes.
Starbucks gonna fuck her and make new Cylons, half Cylon babies.
I don't know. Maybe if it's a slow week, I may pick this up again, or I may read this personally, but I don't know if I want to subjugate you guys to this. Because the thing is, I read this today, and had I read this on Wednesday, I might have been like, if you guys don't want to read Battlestar versus Battlestar, I'll understand.
If somebody picks it, like, I'd read it. I wouldn't pick it.
I wouldn't read it, like, I wouldn't choose to read, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
All right.
But I can't say it was terrible.
The hook for me on this was, obviously I'm a big fan of the new stuff, but then also when I saw that Peter David was attached to it, I kind of had to at least give it a shot. But this is, you know, this is a, I think it's a Dynamite book, so you kind of knew what the quality you were going to get. And
is this what, 4 issues?
It's 6 issues.
6 issues, okay.
So we're going to get the issue where they presumably meet each other, or they fight, and then eventually something happens, but then ultimately, in the long term, it means nothing.
Sure.
All right, so we're on to Marvel with Avengers 675. And I don't have creative on this, but we do know that Wade wrote this.
It's Wade, Ewing, Zub, Laraz, and Curiel.
Okay, yeah, I'm going off Things from Another World, and they're not giving me the creative on this. Yeah, I feel the same way, Alex.
Okay, here's the... And I'm not going to get into the fact that we've got, you know, random world-ending shit. And yeah, I give him credit for explaining why Alpha Flight, you know, all 2 people in that group can't help. The Avengers are the biggest fucking group of jobbers I have ever seen in my entire life. And they involved all the extra jobber teams in this. Like, we had equal points with the fucking US Avengers, the fucking Unity Squad, who I thought no longer existed. The champions were there. They're not Avengers. I remember reading that book. Their whole thing was they split off from the Avengers because they didn't like them anymore. The core Avengers team, which is now led by Falcon, who couldn't even cut it as Captain America, and has such members on it as Hercules. Dave, I know you like Hercules, but come the fuck on.
The new Wasp?
Hercules is their powerhouse. The new Wasp, the old Wasp is on, like, the Unity Squad, by the way, so we got 2 fucking Wasps.
Who's the new Wasp? Is that the daughter of Scott Lang?
Yeah.
No, it's... Isn't no, it? It's... No, he was Hank Pym's secret daughter.
Oh, by mistake. Yeah.
It's Hank Pym's secret daughter that he never knew he had. And by the way, her character in this book has a fourth personality now.
Nadia Van Dyne.
Well, yeah, she took her mom's
name. Oh, okay.
Because Hank Pym's...
No, you're right.
But, yeah. And Ultron. So, well, that's not her mom, actually. Her mom was...
So then why did she take the last name?
I don't know, because she fucking lives with her.
Her mom... Who's her mom?
Her mom was some mystery woman.
No. It's actually fits in Marvel continuity because originally Hank Pym had another wife, but I think in the first issue where they introduced, Ant-Man back in the day. He had another wife.
Now, yeah.
The wife got kidnapped by the Russians and they ended up raising her. And her character, every time I've ever read her from her own book to this book to the other book she was in, she's always written completely different. Like, sometimes she's a goofball who doesn't understand America because she grew up in, you know, isolated Russian spy place. And then in some, she's like an over-emotional teenager. I don't know what her character is. She was over-emotional in this. My point being, the Avengers feel like such a fucking shit team. And I have a feeling this crossover is going to be one of those ones where it's like, okay, you got to read first part in this. And then you got to read second issue Avengers. Then you got to read U.S. Avengers. Then you got to read fucking Occupy Avengers. By the way, Occupy Avengers, Hawkeye, and that fucking Indian guy,
Red Wolf.
How is that a team?
I'm looking at the little map they have of all the various Avengers teams. And under Occupy Avengers, you have Hawkeye and Red Wolf, and that's it.
What are fucking Red Wolf's powers? Being fucking
Native American.
Can he dance? Like, what the fuck? Does he do a chop? I don't know.
He's undefeated?
I read the he's undefeated for a long time, but he's going to fucking heel turn when they flash that money in front of his face. Tatanka. they should have named him Tatanka. No, it's just so many fucking jobbers. And, like, even the main characters, like, they have the shitty versions of them. Like, you got fucking Jane Foster Thor. She's dying.
She's still dying?
Yeah, she's still dying.
No, Marvel's advertising it. They're actually advertising like the death of Jane Foster. She's finally gonna fucking die.
Yeah, I think I'm probably gonna pick that for next week, so we can finally figure out what's going on in that.
By the way, when she dies, that fucking never ending Thor storyline is going to continue to go on.
Yep, I'm under the impression that that's going to be the entirety of Aaron's rest of the run of that book.
Yeah. So, but in this comic, shit's going wrong all over the world. The Earth has been transported somewhere else, apparently. Yeah. And then a bunch of Avengers froze.
Yep.
Or they didn't freeze. They like turned to crystal or some shit.
Crystallized or some shit. Yeah. Like a lot of them. But there was like no rhyme or reason.
Yeah. So they called in all the reserve Avengers. Our focal point in that was Living Lightning. That's a big fucking name. Who he's not Living Lightning anymore. He's just Lightning. He's gay, by the way, because you got to do that. And he comes back along with like five other jobbers who haven't been turned. So what they did was they took the few characters who people gave a shit about and they froze them. So now this big Avengers crossover is about like the fucking C-listers who make up the vast majority of this book. I think Squirrel Girl was unharmed.
Yes, this is correct.
So fucking Squirrel Girl can save the goddamn world from whoever did this.
Hey, she beat Thanos, all right?
She did beat Thanos. That is true.
And the Watcher was there to confirm it was is not
the
a robot.
Confirmed it was the real Thanos. They never showed it, though. It was off camera.
Hey, apparently, this thing is supposed to rewrite key moments in Marvel history.
Yeah, I don't know how much I care.
Comic? What fucking key? Does Marvel have any key moments anymore?
Well, in the past. All the people in the past.
Like fucking Bucky's death. We rewrote that.
Well, because in this, because at the end, you know, we get the image of,
Vendor
her name is Voyager.
Oh, okay.
Apparently her real name is Valerie Vector, and her first appearance, it says here, was Marvel Legacy number one back in November in a statue form. But the only person who noticed that, that statue of the original Avengers had her included was Jarvis. Everyone else seems oblivious to it. And then at the end of it, they're like, oh, look, she's finally returned after all these years.
They also showed that Jarvis should be dead because, like, a fucking building fell on him, but apparently he's just really fucked up in the hospital.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apparently, by the way, there's another problem with this storyline. They're trying to kick it off with a bang, so they got to fucking hurt someone, and it's the fucking butler. Calling it now, Jarvis is behind all this.
He's evil.
Apparently, this thing is 16 issues, by the way, but it's weekly.
Jesus fucking Christ. Yeah. 16 issues of this?
Hey, it's at least it's weekly.
And here's the thing. I already took a peek at next week's books, and we have slim pickings, and I think I may pick it.
If it's coming out every week, I'll fucking read it for a bit. But this fuck God, first fucking issue, and your draw is Jarvis got hurt.
Hey,
he's a fat old man.
Remember there was that big splash page a while back? I think it was one of the relaunches of Marvel. Remember how we saw Citizen V, and we didn't know how they were going to incorporate him because he was just there. And then when we read the books, we didn't see how he was incorporated.
He wasn't.
I'm looking at this lineup. And they have Sunspot listed as Citizen V.
Oh, yeah, he took that name.
Why?
But he doesn't wear the costume.
No.
Because people were pissed off that they weren't using the character, and I don't fucking know, dude. Marvel, Jesus Christ.
Apparently, I'm reading the thing about this character. It says here that...
this isn't the one from the Point One books?
Well, from what I'm reading on the wiki, they showed her as a statue first, but this is her first full appearance. And then the next issue is supposed to be her actual origin.
So
and it says here that, let's see, there aren't any other clues to who Voyager really is. For one thing, we know her secret identity is Valerie Vector. We also know she shares some spiritual DNA with secret history characters like the Sentry and Blue Marvel, and that's basically it.
So wait a minute. She shares connections to other characters who were not in the old comics, but they inserted and pretended they were from the old comics?
Yes.
Yeah, are they going to make a team?
Tom Brevoort urged us to crack open our official handbook to the Marvel Universe and dig for clues to Voyager's true identity. We decided to do... Okay, so she's probably an existing character... Or at one point was an existing character who became a new character.
Well, I do know it might not be connected, but I did read they're bringing Sentry back.
So for the one Sentry,
hopefully this time Bendis won't write it and people might give a shit.
Well, he literally can't write it because he won't be there.
You know who would have made a good writer for Sentry?
Grant Morrison. I don't know.
Tom King.
That guy can write anybody, though. It's not like
that.
Get
him back. Bring him back. Sentry needs him.
A lot of people are saying that it might be Valerio Richards.
That would be an interesting. I don't.
No.
It may not be, but you know, there's theories around that.
Didn't Mark Waid create her?
He might have.
Yeah, but if they're going back and retroactively putting characters in, who's to say they can't retroactively? Time and space continuum, Valeria Richards, blah, 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 blah. Also, you have to keep in mind, like you just mentioned, Wade created her, so he might want to put her in there.
He could, but he would also want the Fantastic Four back.
Maybe this is their, wow.
In the back of his...
I don't know if in the Avengers book, that's when you bring back the Fantastic Four.
Well,
maybe at the end of it.
Yeah.
End of the 16 issues.
And then you're like, read more about this in our next 16-issue story arc. Fucking Spider-Man and the X-Men, fuck. I don't know what they're going to do.
And I'll whisper, no.
And they're going to do a fucking crossover with Watchmen. They're like, yeah, it's working for DC. We might as well try it.
And then the legal department will inform them we can't do that.
Oh, yeah, they didn't tell them they were doing it. What? We don't have Rorschach. That's Horseshack.
That would actually be pretty great. It's Mr. a
Kate.
What's that,
Mr. Kate?
It's a tie with Wet Welcome Back, Carter.
That would be fucking amazing. Vinny Barbarino will be.
I want that book now.
Dude, that's who they should fucking cross over Luke Cage with. He's from that era. And be one of the sweat hogs.
Maybe. Oh, put Tom King on that.
Yeah, fucking put Tom King on the sweat hogs book. He'll do some shit with fucking Horseshack you've never seen before. You don't even know where he's coming from.
His dark.
He can write it under a pen name so he can get out of his contract.
His deep dark history that we don't know about.
He can be Hideo Itami. It's his pen name.
All right. Daredevil 597, writer Charles Soule, art by Stefano Leandi.
I'm going to go smoke. I don't have a lot to say about this.
I liked it.
It was all right.
No, I thought it was great. Dave, what did you think of it? This is one of the books that you picked up. I loved it. This is one of the things, the casualties go ahead.
Yeah, I knew about Wilson Fisk being the mayor. Mm-hmm. Actually, I was aware about that. But I guess we're right in the middle of it or something. Seems that way. All right.
This is part three. Yes, of Mayor Fisk. Yes.
Part three. Okay. Yeah. So apparently, Daredevil, as Matt Murdock, is now the deputy mayor.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm guessing his plan is to tackle Fisk from the inside. Fisk apparently has implemented a law outlawing superheroes in the city. So, like, he's kind of like, he's making Matt Murdock kind of like a figurehead for, like,
just to keep him busy, just to keep him off his trail. He's like, well, I'll make him my deputy mayor, and I'll give him a bunch of this, you know, work that'll keep him busy, but ultimately won't affect what I have planned.
Yeah, basically busy work. He's just there to lead him off his trail. Although he doesn't, you know, he doesn't realize he's a Daredevil. And also in this issue, looks like Muse is after him again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember Muse.
Not really, but they did their best to recap him if you hadn't been reading the Inhumans book.
Yeah, because Muse was around when we were reading. He was like the guy who was painting people in blood or something.
Yeah,
like the Death Sea.
Yeah, they mentioned that in this book because I had all but forgotten.
Yeah, and that one cop from New England made an appearance.
That was cool that they found him in, because I remember that was the few new Inhumans that we actually liked.
Yeah, because I actually remembered him. Because I was like, oh yeah, he's the detective one. Frank McGee.
That's a great name, by the way.
Oh yeah. And apparently his sidekick's still running around. Remember Blindspot?
Oh yeah, because at the end of the issue when they show the big... The side of the building that has the Daredevil made up like Nixon saying, I'm not a crook. And they show Blindside, and he's the one who had found the big mural.
The Blindspot. It says something here about, it says the creature who ripped out Blindspot's eyes and broke his mind. So what, is he blind now? But how can he see that?
That I don't know.
I wonder if he was just figuratively speaking.
We'll have to wait and find out, Dave, when we read the next issue.
I don't know. I liked it.
Yeah, I remember at first I wasn't a big fan of the Soul run of Daredevil. And I even think – didn't you drop Daredevil, or was that after you left the book?
No, I kind of like dropped it near the end. I didn't like it as much.
Yeah, the ten finger stuff was kind of cringy. And this is when we were reading 25 books. And if we had to, you know, drop a book, Daredevil was probably going to be it. But no, I like the storyline of Matt Murdock working under Wilson Fisk as the deputy mayor. There was a little funny part where Foggy comes in, and he's like, oh, I see what you're planning. You know, something happens to Fisk, but I already looked it up. The deputy mayor doesn't take over for the mayor so if the mayor becomes incapacitated.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was
he thought that was his idea. He's like, oh, yeah, you're going to kill him. He's like, I can't because I wouldn't have any power.
Oh, and then the part where they bring him in, he's like, okay, we're going to read you all the rules and regulations that come with being the deputy mayor. And
he's like, what, you don't got them in Braille? No, I got to read them to you.
Well, this is a fun book. This is why I think the Soul run should have been. Like, this is a really good, interesting storyline. And well, I presume they're going, you know, Fisk is up to something. Because
wasn't Soul writing this?
Yeah, he is.
He still is.
Yeah. So what do you – it is what it is.
When they first put him on the book, I wasn't a fan. But now we've had the sabbatical and we come back and we're picking up his Daredevil. I'm sort of on board now. It's pretty good.
It's going to peak on issue 600 because this is issue 587. So we're due for some big stuff.
In a year.
What, in 3 months?
You said it was 587.
597.
Oh, okay.
You fool.
Well, I miss her.
Yes.
I'm sorry.
Well, let's come back to a book that you picked. She-Hulk 161, writer Marioko Tamayaki, art by Tahoeing Lindsay.
Lindsay. This was the end of a storyline again.
It's end of an arc that they called Jennifer Walters Must Die Part 3, but this was kind of the end of all the stuff they'd done since –
Yeah.
They brought back She-Hulk.
So apparently what happened was the leader is back, and he gave a woman Hulk powers.
The woman from the beginning of this book.
By the way, this isn't the end of the arc. There is one more issue.
Ah, okay.
Well, at least one, because if you look all the way at the end, it says issue 162, Jen Walters Must Die, Part 4, Journeys to the Center of Her Mind.
Ah, there you go. But as far as all the stuff with the woman from the hotel and the leader stuff, that stuff's wrapped up. Because remember, I believe this is the girl from the beginning of the relaunch, right?
Can I just get to – no, that was a different character.
Oh, okay.
This girl was like a big fan of She-Hulk, apparently.
Oh, okay.
That girl had a completely different story. I have a question, though. When did She-Hulk get the power to speak to someone in, like, their mind?
Their subconscious? Yes, I know.
Because that's what happened in this book, and I'm like, okay – I understand the leader is, like, mind-controlling her, but – and his goal was to make Jen Hulk up, and then since she can no longer control the Hulk, she would murder her. But Jen was able to control herself and not kill her. However, there was an extended scene of her as Jen Walters talking to this girl's human part in her mind – to, like, calm her down, and they never explained how she was doing that.
The way I read that as, this isn't really happening. This is happening in Jennifer's subconscious.
It could.
Why wouldn't she just talk to herself then?
Because they've established that because of what happened to her, there's, like, this disconnect between Jennifer and the She-Hulk.
Yeah, because she's, like, got PTSD.
Yeah, so now when she becomes She-Hulk, she sort of, like, it takes over, and she can't really control what it does.
So why does she have PTSD?
What in Civil War 2?
Because Thanos beat the shit out of her and almost killed her.
Okay.
So now when she turns into Hulk, she's gray and is stupid.
That's pretty much the gist of the character, and I presume the next issue is what, she's going to therapy and dealing with it, so we can go back to the...
Yeah, pretty much.
So we can go back to the status quo?
Yeah, I think.
The illusion of change, isn't that right? That's supposed to be the gimmick of comic books? You stick with a book long enough and you're rewarded with the illusion of change. I mean, on the surface, everything seems the same. It's because it is.
If she's just like She-Hulk again all the time, the book kind of has to end, because that's the gimmick. Like, that's what made the book different.
Mm-hmm.
And if she's just She-Hulk having fun, it's not different. It's what She-Hulk always was.
Okay. All right, that's going to do it for the Marvel portion of the show. Let's move on to Valiant with Bloodshot Salvation, Issue 5, writer Jeff Lemire, and art by Luis La Rosa.
Last issue of an arc.
that should be the theme of this week's show. I think that's when they give us the subtitle of, yeah. For finishing up about a bunch of arcs.
This issue is the other Bloodshots are still around.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And OG Bloodshot went, even though he's not the OG.
Yeah, he's not. These other guys our Bloodshot. Longer.
Our OG Bloodshot. He found out that magic was raised by a hillbilly cult leader who apparently
child brides.
Yeah, he had he married his own daughters.
Well, I don't know if they were their own daughters, but they were underage girls.
Very underage girls.
Yes.
So she escaped from him, but was always scared of him. So Bloodshot's like, oh, I'm going to go fucking kill this guy. So he went, but at the same time, whatever's left of Project Rising something.
That was it.
I forget their name.
Isn't it Project Rising? Or Project Rising Spirit?
Spirit?
Yeah, I think that's the name.
They were still around, and they shut off all the nanites. nanomachines. They shut all those off, so he lost his powers, and the hillbillies were able to capture and beat the shit out of him because he really wanted Magic back, even though she's probably too old for him now, Jerry Lawler. And they had a problem because Ninjak impregnated Magic, and she had the kid, but the kid looks like Bloodshot, and apparently he's going to die. Ninjak was there for some reason, so Ninjak had to go find him, and he found him, and he started cutting everybody's heads off. And he's like, hey, Bloodshot there, you got to come with us because your kid's going to die. And he's like, oh, that sucks. Hang on a second. And then he went and got the old man and fucking...
killed him, yeah.
He slashed him in the back with Ninjak's sword.
Nice.
And then he choked him to death. And then remarked that he didn't actually feel better after doing this.
Yeah, because he was sort of like, oh, I killed a bunch of people as Bloodshot, but now I don't have the nanites. This is going to be the first... This will be the first murder I've had as just a guy.
It didn't make him feel better. And it was funny, too, because Ninjak is standing there watching it, and he's like, okay, are you done? Just watching him kill the old man, made fun of him, like, what kind of fucking hillbilly shit you got going on here, Bloodshot? But now they have to go back and see what's going on with his kid, because his kid's apparently going to die.
I love the cult leader's name, Daddy.
Yeah, Daddy. It was clever.
Is this who all the wrestlers in the 1970s have been talking to?
Daddy.
Well, because if you ever watched, you know, a wrestling promo from the 70s and the 80s or the early 80s.
People did say daddy.
Yeah, they said daddy.
They were still saying brother.
No, that was the 80s.
Oh, is that when they started saying brother?
Yeah, brother.
Well, that's a murderer who said brother. Everybody else said brother or Jack.
Jack, or dude.
All right, and let's wrap up this week's books with Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe, art by our writer Elliot Raoul, art by Joe Bennett.
Yeah, somebody's what's it called? Oh, Roku, right? Was
Roku killed his handler in front of him, and then said she would kill her family. Unless Ninjak stole something from the good guys, from Gate. So she put a poison in him.
Was it poison?
Or she put a camera or a recording. She put something in him that let her know everything he was doing and saying.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So he couldn't tell anyone what he was doing. So he broke in, he got the thing, he went out, and he had to fight, like, Livewire on the way out and, you know, Nigel. And then they're like, okay, we gotta call in Unity. And Unity is apparently now just every superhero in the Valiant Universe.
Pretty much, except for Quantum and Woody, which upset me.
Because, yeah, they showed Exo Manowar, they showed Eternal Warrior, they showed Archer and Armstrong, who I'm positive were not in Unity. Livewire was already there, and that's it. The Generation Zero kids are
As long as we're talking Unity and Ninjak, isn't it supposed to be Unit Y and Ninja K?
No, he's Ninja K, but I think Unity is just Unity because there was no space or anything.
Oh, because remember we did that. Oh, we looked at that origin issue that they did a while back, and they were called Unit Y, and that's what they had the name.
Were they?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. I think he's right.
Oh, damn it. Okay. But they said it like Unity. Like, Ninjak, if I'm not mistaken, the K is also capitalized.
Well, but the thing is, you have a bunch of people saying it, and they weren't emphasizing the K, so they're just like Ninjak.
Well, if it's Unit Y, it should be Unit hyphen Y.
Like the X-Men?
Yeah.
Like Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, yes. Not Spider-Man.
But Superman is Superman.
Yeah, Superman.
If it sounds like we're getting off on a tangent, that was pretty much the gist of this book, because it was all action.
It was a big action thing.
My thing is, I'm reading this, and actually, when you were doing the recap, this is when I came up with this revelation. Haven't people like watched enough stuff to realize when the superhero is doing something bad? And they know him pretty well.
Well, Ninjak's a dick, though.
Yeah, but don't.
Yeah, he is.
But haven't you seen this happen enough times?
Well,
where
in the Valiant universe?
I mean just in pop culture in general, when the good guy's acting bad, no one ever thinks to think, hey, are they being blackmailed? Are they having their arm being twisted and they can't explain?
Well, maybe in the Valiant universe they don't have those types of stories.
Doesn't seem to be. I don't really recall any stories.
Wasn't
like
there
this.
One where in Ninjak, of all people, they had that storyline where MI6 were on the hunt for Ninjak?
Yeah, but wasn't that because MI6 had been corrupted by bad people?
I don't know.
I think it was.
But there was that funny sequence where they see that someone's trying to break into MI6, and when they see Ninjak, they're like, oh, great, Ninjak's here. He'll help us find this guy.
He should have just gone with that. Like, it's just saying, like, yeah, I fucking couldn't find him. I think he went over here somewhere, and then he could have gone, whoop.
Or he could have been like, oh, let's all split up and find him, and then he takes them out one by one.
Well, he actively didn't kill anyone.
Just knocked them out one by one.
Because he was trying to say, this is going to be harder than usual because I can't kill them.
He said, I could easily do this, but what the difficulty is going to be is I'm going to have to do this non-lethally. But a thoroughly good book. My only real criticism of it is it was all action. This is the book I had last. I wasn't sure if I was going to make it on time. And I was like, oh, perfect. This is all action.
Did you read in the front of this where they explained, like, apparently this is based on, like, they did, like, a digital thing, like a digital mini movie before...
We talked about this, that they made like a mini movie and that, of all people, John Morrison was attached to it.
Yeah, they talked about that. Like, that's what this is. It's just, this is expanded. So when you're watching this, you have to mentally insert John Morrison into Ninjak's role.
And
imagine John Morrison trying to act like a English guy.
Johnny Impact?
Is he still Johnny Impact? Is he still with that company?
Yeah, he's Johnny Impact in Impact, and he's Johnny Mundo in Lucha Underground.
By the way, think about that. Johnny Impact still works for TNA, but Ethan Carter III is going to WWE.
Boom.
Wow.
Although to be fair, I don't think John Morrison is signed to TNA because I think he just paid for. I saw a recent interview with him, and someone asked him who he thinks is the best wrestling in the world, and he said New Japan.
Wow!
I'm sure lots of guys in TNA would say that now because they let him say whatever they want.
And he
also said he wishes that he can wrestle for them soon.
I wonder why he hasn't.
Yeah, that is weird.
I don't know. Maybe he probably doesn't have any friends in the company that want to bring him in.
You know who would have had a better match against Tanahashi than Jay White? Fucking Johnny Mundo.
Well, I don't know about that. He's never been that great.
Well, send him over there. He knows how to work with the Mexicans. So send him over to wrestle Naito or something.
But just know when you're watching that Ninjak thing and you're looking at John Morrison portray him, just realize that Ninja K's abs, while his abs are great, they're not as good as Dave Meltzer's.
No, Ninjak his abs are nothing compared to Dave Meltzer's.
Of the Wrestling Observer newsletter. Which he said, which is the stupidest thing I've ever heard anyone say.
He might have been joking.
No. Dave's a little aspy, so.
I do know after he said that, I immediately went to look at pictures of John Morrison shirtless. And while doing it, I thought, man, I'm kind of gay right now.
Hey, maybe it's just the shirt, dude.
Yeah, it was just the shirt. Did he have one of those fucking superhero costumes where they paint the abs on? Or like the fucking Giant Gonzalez gimmick where they're drawn on?
See, I'm looking at the teaser trailer.
That's what
right
Roman
now.
Reigns should wear.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Wear a superhero suit. With the abs built in.
Yeah, I'm trying to look at the trailer right now.
I never watched it.
Because it was coming out, it's coming out, and I didn't know, did they actually... Oh, no wonder why we haven't seen it yet. Coming early 2018.
Wait, it's not out yet, but they were advertising it and saying it.
Maybe okay. It came out really early 2018, like January 1st. Oh, cool. Okay. Archer and Armstrong. Sorry, I marked out a little bit.
That's fine.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's books. Let's move on to our final segment, next week's books.
Everybody get up. Everybody get down. Get real sucked up stuff because the Birdman's in town. All right. Come on, y'all. Get on up, y'all. Let's go now.
Bird.
Dave sent that to me last week, and I was like, oh, I'm going to use some other song, but I think I'm going to put this in my back pocket because this is a pretty terrible song, too.
You know, on the that wrestling album, Pile Driver, he sang Pile Driver.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Goddamn, damn, hits it like a pile driver. Yeah, I remember that.
All right, let's do something that I'm not entirely sure Alex and Dave have looked up yet, but next week's books. Did. Oh, you did?
Yeah, you want them?
Sure.
Batman 39.
Okay, I picked that as well.
Justice League 37.
Are you sure there's not a reprint? Because I certainly would have picked that.
No, I'm not now.
Let me look it up now. No, you're right. Justice League 37. I don't know how I missed that, but I missed it.
Okay. Damage, number one.
Now, what's
Further
this?
Further Adventures of Nick Wilson, number one. And Days of Hate, number one. I'm going for number ones. Further Adventures of Nick Wilson is a 4-issue series from Image, and Days of Hate is a 12-issue series from Image.
Okay. So...
Are those number ones?
Yeah.
Finally, something...
And Damage, number one, is a... Damage is a lower-tier DC character who, looking at the cover of the book, has been completely changed.
Because, you know, Rebirth.
Because of Rebirth.
I thought the whole point of Rebirth was to bring back old stuff.
Well, he is old. I mean, he's not that old. I think he was created in the 90s. He had the... So his gimmick was, as he got the shit kicked out of him, he got stronger. He would get the shit kicked out of him too much, and then he would explode. Like in the original comic... Like he accidentally blew up his high school.
What was that one book you guys were trying to get me to read? The detective one by Brubaker, where the guy had powers. Wasn't that similar?
Oh, that was what was it called? Sleeper.
There we go.
Yeah, it was sort of like that, okay. Except that guy didn't explode.
No, that book was kind of deadly serious, and the idea of him blowing up seems kind of comical.
It would have been. It wasn't played up for laughs in that comic, although his later appearances, it was played up for laughs. And then eventually they made it so that he could control when he exploded, and they realized that that kind of makes him a boring character.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Well, since Alex picked two of my books, I only have two picks for... Next week, he picked my Batman and Justice League, so I'm going to go with Avengers and Mighty Thor. They're teasing this as the death of Jane Foster, so I want to see where it's going. And we read Avengers this week, so I want to see at least the next issue.
Can you pick Action Comics?
Is Action Comics on it next week?
I believe so. I wrote it down.
Let's see. This is what I also think is going to wind up happening, where one of us won't pick enough books, and then... No, Action Comics does not come out next week.
It doesn't? Why did I write it down?
Because that was from this week.
Why does next week look so slow? I'm looking at the list.
It's really slow. That's why I initially only picked like 3 or 4 books.
Yeah, that's why I looked ahead and picked a bunch of new shit.
Yeah, because it's slim picking. So right now we stand at 7 books.
Boy, I'm trying to see. I'm like scrapped.
Well, we can always do what we did last week where you just, you know, you just give me the list and post.
We can still read those 3 freaking issues of...
Here's an idea, Dave. How about when it comes out, we read it?
Yeah, but then you got to read 4.
Okay, you know what?
Hey, I read fucking 5 books this week.
Okay.
You guys should take your time and read fucking Mr. Miracle 1-5.
Okay, I'll do the next time Mr. Miracle comes out. And Dave, Listen, here's the thing. You have to convince Alex to read all the issues of Eternity.
If we only have fucking 7 books, then we'll have 10. I'll fucking read them.
Okay, good. That's 3 books right there.
10 fucking books? Like, I can do that.
Yeah, that's 10 books for next week. We'll read the 3 Eternity and the other 7 books.
Are you going to want to take a second peek, or is that it?
I'm looking, but nothing is catching my eye, because everything that was the number one that I wanted to read, I guess, already picked. And what else is here? I'm looking. No, it's pretty slim next week. But then again, it's the beginning of the year. It's usually kind of slow this time of year, ain't it?
Yeah, because people don't have money because they
spend money on.
Brian Wood is writing a Robotech comic.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, I knew about that.
No, here's the thing. I read the first issue, and even though Brian Woods is a name, it's just Robotech. Like, they're just doing the same storyline all over again. So if you've seen the series, you're missing nothing.
But why is he just rewriting?
I don't know, because I was excited, and when we obviously weren't doing the show, I was still reading comic books. So when I saw that had come out, I was like, oh, I was excited. And then I read it, and it's the beginning of Robotech.
Is it like new dialogue or something?
Is the art good?
The art's not that good. The writing is – basically imagine if someone had gone back – and it's the same story, but it's new, better dialogue.
So that it reads better.
Yeah, basically you can read this as an adult and not be pseudo kind of embarrassed. Well, I never known Robotech to really have bad dialogue. Maybe just the songs were particularly bad.
Oh, I found a book to read.
Oh, there we go.
Okay. New story arc. Remember Kill or Be Killed?
Yes.
No.
I liked it.
Yeah, do you remember that book? That was a good book. Yeah. That was the one where he made a
what
deal
was
with
that?
The one with the demon.
It was like a demon or the Reaper. Or
it's that Brubaker book that you got bored, but I still liked it. Now, but at the same time,
I got bored of that because they never did anything.
Cool. Let's read it.
Well, that's all right. It's further along now. It might be better. Maybe they've confirmed there actually was a demon.
So that's 11 books then.
Yeah, that puts you at 11 books. I'll give Dave the freedom. And obviously do this before Wednesday the show goes up. But if you want to add anything to that list, you're more than welcome to. I'll just put it in post.
Okay.
All right. With that, the way it's going to do it for this week's show. So from all of us at Comic Conversations at halfguard.com, thanks for checking out this week's show. And as always, check you guys out next time. Adios.